Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Zarin.
Yo, what's up, Elizabeth?
Nothing much. You know what's ridiculous?
Oh, man. So I was going through the holidays and I wanted to tell you about this. They got this holiday pastry that I was like, oh, it is pour vous. Now, this holiday pastry, it's a French-Canadian thing.
Uh-huh.
It's called the pet de soir. My French may be messing that up. But what that means is the sister's fart. Now, the sister's fart, it has an interesting story. The people of Quebec, the Québécois, they bake this, like, it's like a cinnamon roll, right?
Uh-huh.
They bake this thing around the holidays, and it is a pastry, glazed butter, cinnamon, the whole bit. But the name comes from nuns. Like, that's
okay.
The sister.
Yeah.
So the nuns were apparently having a, you know, just nun time around the abbey, and they're just, like, doing their bit. And one of them was in the kitchen working on some dough. Another one was working, doing whatever she was doing, cutting flowers, we'll say. And all of a sudden, she cut some cheese and was like, and all the other nuns started laughing. And it became this hysterical wave. And the one who was sitting there baking kicked some dough into the hot oil she had going, and it started cooking. And she's like, oh, crank. And then, but she fished it out, and she's like, what can I do? And she, like, decided to put some, like, you know, sugar on it and some cinnamon. It was
uh-huh.
like, oh, criminy, that's good. And then all of a sudden, boom, we have a new pastry, the nun's fart, or rather the sister's fart in French.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
I
it's
like
a product mashup, farts and pastry.
Cutting up in the kitchen with like a huge vat of boiling oil.
Yeah, exactly.
That you can be all, oops.
Oops, Daisy.
Oh, okay. That is ridiculous.
I thought you'd like
that's
that.
Totally
I know how
ridiculous.
You like baking.
Do you know what else is ridiculous?
No. Do you want to tell me? Share it with me.
A ruthless gang of women out to rob London blind.
Oh, I love this.
This is Ridiculous Crime, a podcast about absurd and outrageous capers, heists, and cons. It's always 99% murder-free and 100% ridiculous. Zarin.
Elizabeth.
Have you ever read 1001 Nights?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
As a child.
Yeah,
wasn't
it's
like
a collection of Middle Eastern folktales. It's framed as being told by Scheherazade.
Uh-huh.
And she's telling them as cliffhangers to a king who intends to kill her in the morning.
Yeah, and she's got to keep him enthralled.
Yeah, so like, you know, because the king's wife was unfaithful. He didn't trust any woman ever again. He gets rid of her. And then he keeps marrying these new gals and offing them the next morning. He's running out of brides.
Such a brutal child story. I remember hearing that and being like, wow, men are messed up.
So he's running out of brides.
Uh-huh.
And then enter Scheherazade.
Yes.
She's smart. She tells really engaging tales every evening, and she leaves him wanting more, and that prevents her death.
Like the ultimate, it's a beautiful cliffhanger because she herself is both hanging on the
exactly.
cliff of the story she's telling.
So she does this for 1001 nights,
mm-hmm.
and then she winds up being pardoned by him because he realizes, like, you know, you're not so bad after all. A clever woman outsmarts the emotional and bitter man to
mm-hmm.
survive. So One of the stories in the collection is that of Alibaba and the 40 Thieves.
Yes.
And we've seen this throughout culture.
It's been done a lot.
The story's been, exactly. So Alibaba, good dude, totally broke. He finds a thieves' den. He's able to gain entry by using the magical incantation, Open Sesame.
Mm-hmm.
And the thieves find out that he got into the den. They try and kill him. His son, he gets help from his, servant / slave girl. Son falls in love with her, marries her, whatever. All's well. Alibaba keeps the secret of the treasure.
Lots of slave girls in love.
Always. So why am I telling you this?
Because you just love slave girls.
Because I just kind of keep going back to things I used to teach in world literature. So 40 thieves.
Yes.
That's a lot of thieves.
It's just the right amount, Elizabeth.
That's 40 head of thieves. I'm going to tell you a story today, a legend.
Okay.
About a very large group of thieves.
I love legends and I love thieves. This should be great.
They operated with precision. They lived by strict codes.
Mm-hmm.
They were feared and revered. They were women.
Yes, my kind of thieves.
They were often referred to at the time as the 40 Thieves.
Okay.
But most knew them then and continue to refer to them now as the 40 Elephants.
Oh, I've heard about these. Yeah. Yes.
So today I'm going to weave a tale for you like a modern Scheherazade.
I promise you no harm.
Pretend that you've been burned by bad hosts in the past and you don't trust a co-host.
No, yes.
And you'll figure, you're going to let me run one act of an episode and then fire me.
Yeah, no, this is your one chance.
I'm going to tell you a story so engaging that you'll want to let me keep my job by the time this whole thing's over.
We'll see.
So, Legend of the 40 Elephants.
This is fun.
Why elephants? Why elephants? Why?
Why not?
Yeah, well, that's true. The gang was established in the 1870s.
Okay.
And some say, though, that it was even before then, that there are claims that there were iterations of this all the way back to the late 1700s.
Oh, damn.
Which would make it older than the Sicilian Mafia.
Yes, our thing.
Yes. So the 40 Elephants, female-headed, all-female gang based in Southwark, London.
Okay. Is that Suffolk?
It looks like Southwark.
Oh, okay. I was wondering because you made a weird sound Southwark. There in the middle of what should have been Southwark.
I'm trying to not incur the ire of all of our
English. I appreciate
English
that. That's respectful.
Listeners.
It counteracts what I do.
Yeah, Southwark, Suffolk, London. So they operated out of London's Elephant and Castle District.
Oh, right.
You've seen that on the underground. Mm-hmm. The name of the district comes from the name of a pub at the major crossroads, the Elephant and Castle, and that location was originally a blacksmith and a cutler.
Oh,
like a blacksmith and cutler making cutlery,
in essence. Yeah, I was catching up.
thus the name.
Making dance shoes. He just happened to be named Cutler.
So the crest for the trade union of cutlers had an elephant on it, and then it looked like it had a castle on its back.
Oh, right, okay.
The castle is likely what's called a howdah.
Like
which
the
is
seat
a saddle seat, But so it looked like an elephant in a castle, and that's why then when it became a pub, Elephant and Castle, because the crest was
hanging up there.
And then a lot of people just refer to it as the elephant.
Okay.
So that's how we get the name, the 40 Elephants. The Elephant and Castle pub was pretty much headquarters for the 40 Elephant gang.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name. There were actually about 40 women.
So at this point, is it a nice place, or is it more of like a thieves' den?
It's a thieves' den.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's about 40 members. The number got as high as into the 70s at its peak.
They just always called them 40
but they always
it's a nice biblical number.
And it's the 40 thieves, Alibaba and the 40 thieves.
Oh, yeah.
Go back to that's why I talked about this.
Right. I'm over here trying to inject the Bible. I don't know what's wrong with it.
You're always doing that. So the 40 Elephants, as everyone knew it, was started and led by a woman named Mary Carr.
Okay.
Mary had a criminal pedigree. Her dad was John Carr, who was a really well-known thief and forger. So, runs in the fam. She is arrested for the first time for theft when she was 14 years old.
Cut her teeth. I like it.
Right? By 1881, she had the whole 40 Elephants thing cooking along.
Mm-hmm.
They're good to go. Let's take a moment and reflect on the living conditions.
I was wondering where we are in London.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible, especially for women.
That's, yes.
So, if you're not married, you have to be, a housemaid or a governess or maybe, a nun or something.
Working in a scullery or kitchen or,
If you're a widow or, if you get deserted by your husband,
What happened?
A lot of them become prostitutes.
Oh.
You know, it's sort of like all you can do. Poor house in some cases. Okay. But, I mean, so in these economically stressed areas, that there are very, very limited options for these women.
I imagine, yeah.
Mary Carr wants more for the women in her neighborhood, and she offers them that with gang membership.
Good answer, Mary.
She's like, let's think bigger.
Look, this is what they do when they go to war. We're going to go to war from inside.
Like, most of the members of the gang did prison time.
I imagine.
At some point or another. But they felt like that was a risk worth taking.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's either that or starve to death.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically living in conditions so brutal. Like, how would you not turn to,
well, and you'll hear what they, you know, it was a pretty good life that they could have. So a retired gang member was quoted as saying, if you've got to be crooked, it's not a bad life. Like, see, so look, if you're
first-hand account,
you're going to have to break the law one way or another. This is probably the best way
to do it.
If
people tell you, oh, you'll love Tulum, you got to go to Mexico and you listen to them. And she says, oh, this is a great way of crime. I'm listening to both.
Exactly.
I'm going to Tulum and I'm going into crime.
In 1900, there was a police bulletin that was put out identifying Mary Carr as one of the most dangerous women in London. Mm-hmm. And they called her Queen of the 40 Thieves.
Oh, good name.
It was already out there. She ran 40 elephants, the 40 elephants, like a boss. But she also changed the way that women were seen and valued the time. So she crafted, she like came up with this phrase and this whole term, hoisters.
Hoisters.
Hoisters. Someone who steals stuff and sells
it. Yeah, I get you. Like it was lifted.
Yeah, like a thief and a fence at the same time. So becoming a hoister was an option for women who wanted more than society would allow them at the time.
Yeah.
They developed skills, they made money, they chose their own fates, they redefined their roles because they became totally independent and they didn't rely on a husband or father to take care of them.
True outlaws.
Yes. So, and hoisters were seen as like more professional and refined than basic just shoplifters.
Yeah, they're not pickpockets, they're not cut purses. These are people who are going after people who are wealthy and this is not hurting them to have it be taken.
And it was really refined. They were super wily. They had all these methods to avoid capture.
Mm-hmm.
They would use all these aliens. But they also had really beautiful outfits and stuff. So,
ooh, I love it.
They're working class women who gained entry into a world that would be otherwise inaccessible to them. And because they, you know, dressed the part and they had all this training, they were able to like peruse stores with ease because no one questioned them. It looked like they had the cash to spend.
Yeah, they look like they're in the right space.
So
I love it.
Hoisting was like the prime crime for this game. Mary also coached gang members on the art of seduction.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would blackmail rich and powerful men.
So would they just like, you know, do the honey trap idea where they go get alone with them, get them into a compromising position, someone else comes in and witnesses?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they would use that when they needed to call in favors to avoid conviction. So they weren't really getting money
for it. You're
doing
that to judges and to people who have power in this position.
Yeah. Yes. Mary Carr also helped these women get hired as maids in wealthy homes.
Smart.
So that they didn't steal from the homes.
No, but they had access and they knew and they could listen.
And they could get access to like correspondence.
Paperwork.
So they could forge they could forge references.
They knew what the signature looked like.
Well, yeah, you could forge a reference from the lady of the house so that if you say, you know, oh, so-and-so referred me to.
You can get the actual letterhead they need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's brilliant.
And so, you know, got someone vouching for you if you want to be another lady that lunches. So hoisting was done mostly at these department stores. That's like the number one target. It was pretty easy for them to pull this sort of theft off at the time. Because no one would invade a gentlewoman's space.
Oh, yeah.
They would be given so much privacy, and that was, like, the biggest sign of respect. So they would, like, be able to gather up a bunch of stuff. I'm going to try this on.
And walk around with it, and everyone's assuming.
And they had this, like, really voluminous attire.
Outfits, yeah. They could tuck in a lot of stuff.
They had a lot of secret spots sewn in, and then but just by the nature of the bulk of it.
And they were in, like, the bustles and all that, like, big-hipped dresses.
Right.
Yeah.
So no one's going to be like, okay, you've carried a bunch of stuff you want to go try on, and, like, do you need help with that? And if they no, I'm going to do this. They had a lot of weapons sewn into their clothes. Like,
what?
If they got into a spot, they
got tight and they're like, pull a hat pin.
So they had all these, like, you know, this crazy gadgets in the dresses.
I love this.
They dressed like rich ladies. They got treated like rich ladies.
But
employees.
They'll catch you like a lady on the street.
Exactly. Employees catered to their whims. Uh-huh. So they could just start, like, order it, go get me, you know, a cup of tea or whatever. And like, oh, yes, mom. And then off they go.
Give me a carriage.
Yeah. And it was just like, the more you order them around, like, then the more realistic these women seem. They had a really strict rule. The 40 elephants had a strict rule about ill-gotten goods. No one was allowed to wear or use anything they stole.
Oh, that's so really smart.
They had to use, they, if they wanted to buy something, they had to use the money that they made from reselling the stuff to make their legitimate purchases.
Yeah.
They didn't want anything to be able to be traced.
Directly back to them.
Yeah. So they went out and they bought luxury items that they wanted and they wore them with confidence because they had the receipts. It also let them build a rapport with the shop employees and gave them legitimacy.
Brought real dollars
in. So they're flipping all these goods, but they come in, they've got real money, and they're just throwing it around.
Real money spends.
Yeah, exactly. A London detective said of their techniques, quote, "Their methods were so remarkable that they had never been seen to take any goods, and none of the taken property had ever been recovered."
Wow.
So they're just smooth. It's like after they're gone, then people realize, wait, someone took that.
Mm-hmm.
They had all these fake ledgers that they would come up with. There was a gang member named Ada McDonald. She had her house raided by the cops. They were looking for all the stolen merchandise, and she had lots of stolen merchandise in her house.
Okay.
But she also had ledgers and doctored receipts to go with everything. So everything was on the books.
She had the paper to prove it. And so even if you come sweating her.
Yeah.
I love this.
So the police couldn't press charges. Everything looked legit.
Mm-hmm. And she's got the shopkeepers to vouch. I mean,
totally.
That's
she can be like, well, don't I buy these things? Yeah. So Mary Carr, she ran the 40 Thieves almost until her death in 1924. But she did choose an heir. Because she's the queen. The Victorian age is coming to a close. World War I is looming ahead. Mary knows, like, I'm getting up there. I have to make a succession plan. Mm-hmm. So in 1916, she passed the power to a new queen of the 40 elephants. Mary knew her time was running out, and the gang needed a new visionary.
Someone who could adjust to the new times. Mm-hmm. You got radio coming on.
Everything's
changing.
Things
are going
different
with streetcars.
So, like, Mary, she represents the old guard.
Mm-hmm.
And the traditional ways.
Yes.
And then she brings on this new upstart who's going to bring the gang into the jazz age with a bang. The new queen of the realm was a woman named Diamond Dallas.
Oh, my God. I love that nickname.
When we come back from this break, I'll tell you all about how Diamond Dallas took the 40 Thieves to a new era.
Hell yeah.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, it's me, Blippi. And this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika. And this is our brand new podcast.
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on. Get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites. follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Zarin, we're back.
Yeah.
When we left off, Mary Carr, of the Queen of the 40 Elephants, had passed control of the 40 Elephants to a woman named Alice Diamond. Alice.
Oh, so it literally was her name. So Diamond Alice is.
Right. And she was known, thanks to the police, as either Diamond Alice or Diamond Annie. You see it two different ways in all the work. But her name, her real name is Alice Diamond. But she's like Diamond Alice or Diamond Annie. I don't know why they call her Annie, but it sounds better, I think.
Yeah, maybe
Diamond
it's like
Annie.
One's like John or Jack, which just becomes a fix because it's a name for.
Yeah. So it's Alice. She's only 20 years old when she becomes queen of the 40 Elephants.
So she's good then.
She's real good at crime. She grew up in a workhouse, a poorhouse. Interestingly enough, someone else who has also appeared on this podcast was raised in the very same workhouse as Alice.
Get out.
Can you guess who it was? Late 1800s, early 1900s, London.
It wouldn't be Fancy Pants.
Pretty Pants.
Yeah, it wouldn't be Pretty Pants Bandit. They're New York. So who is in... It's not going to be Glass Eye. He wouldn't cross paths with them.
It's Charlie Chaplin.
Whoa! I would not have gone there.
Raised in the same workhouse. So Alice, she comes from this big family. She's one of seven kids. Her younger sister, Louisa, also joins the 40 Elephants. Mm-hmm. She has a brother named Tommy, who's a member of the Elephant and Castle Mob, which is like the boys' gang.
So she grew up in like a Jewish immigrant enclave in the poorhouse?
In the poorhouse.
And then so she's like seen like have to come all the way up in class.
Yeah, she's seen a lot.
That's great.
Yeah. And her family was like deep into crime.
Yes.
They were all crimers. It makes sense. They didn't have enough money to house and feed themselves, and that put them in the poorhouse. But the thing is with the workhouse, it keeps people alive, but it doesn't let them save and grow.
Yeah.
It just perpetuates.
Yeah, exactly. It's
Enter
like sharecropping.
Crime. Exactly. So Alice is like this natural choice for Queen of the 40 Elephants. She's 5'9", which was unusually tall at the time. It's like not wild now. I mean, I'm 5'9".
But then...
At the time in London, the average height for a man was 5'6".
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Huh. So she's really like standing out.
That
on
surprises
the street.
Me. I would have placed it inches taller than that.
Yeah. Well, and she's a bit of a bruiser. The first time she was arrested.
She can throw those things?
So the first time she's arrested as a teen, it took three policemen to take her in.
Huh.
And she loved this reputation that she was building of just like, you got to come at her. Much like another favorite of ours, Willie Carter Sharp.
Yeah.
Alice loved her namesake diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
It's in her name. So to add to her legend, she wore all these diamond rings as like basically brass knuckles, as knuckle dusters.
Oh my God,
so that she could like inflict maximum damage when she was tuning someone up.
God, they look good. They're going to make you look
exactly.
bad.
Exactly. And so that's when the police started calling her like Diamond Alice or Diamond Annie.
Okay.
And they said she had, quote, a punch to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
So here's this teenager gets pinched. She just starts throwing down to the cops, three of them
Don't
in.
Don't make me put these rocks on you.
Exactly. On one occasion, she gets arrested and she goes before the magistrate. And the magistrate asks her, like, you know, what's with your violent treatment of the police? Who like, why?
Why do you hate us?
Why?
What have we ever done?
This is what she says, quote, police forces are set up by governments to stop others getting a share of what they've got.
Oh.
Yeah. She's like,
oh, damn.
It wasn't like, oh, try me again, sucker. Yeah. Like, she was like getting political.
You are the boot of an unfair state, an oppressor. Yeah, damn.
She has like a black beret on.
Yeah.
So it's like, she's not just ruthless, though. She's brilliant.
Like, anarchists get nervous around her. Like, why are you so intense? Like, why you gotta come on so strong?
There. Everyone respects her. Her leadership was like welcomed and supported by gang. Her lieutenant was a woman named Margaret Maggie Hughes, who came from a family of criminals.
Okay.
She was an amazing character and like the perfect sidekick for Alice. Maggie drove a Ford V8 with a periscope on it so that she could see the cops like coming or chasing. And like
spinning it around. She's like rear view mirror.
She's just like, it's so cartoonish. Yeah, like this big periscope and she's got like goggles on. Alice is like this, you know, proto Amazon in those days of 5'9". Maggie was 4'11".
Oh, my God.
So these two.
Yes.
Maggie's got tattoos all over her arms, and she's got, like, this crazy temper.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm
little,
not.
Like, tattooed little, spark
just
plug?
Spark plug. Real, you know, she's just, and she's, like, almost always drunk.
Yes.
So she's just feisty, like.
He's spitting mad.
One time she goes into this store, and there's, like, this tray of diamond rings out on display, and she just picks it up and walks out, and, like, runs right into a cop on the street. So she gets arrested, convicted, serves 2 years for that stunt.
Oh, she couldn't get out of that one.
No, she gets arrested a lot.
Oh, okay.
Like a lot in her life.
Well, she's drunk a lot. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So wait, let's go back a little earlier to the days of Alice's reign. This is in the 1920s.
Right.
Flapper era in full swing.
Yes.
Glamorous, bright young things are all the rage to silent films and like expanded access to print media and radio, so all these pictures. Under the leadership of Mary Carr, the 40 Elephants established themselves as just like all these independent, strong women. And sure, they're criminals, but they're also businesswomen. They also, they were able to pull themselves out of poverty and live this life of luxury. So at the start of the jazz age, luxury is feeling really new and sleek and young and exciting. The gang is making headlines, but not for their capers. They threw enormous decadent parties.
Like, are we talking like F. Scott Fitzgerald?
It's very Gatsby. Yes, exactly. Super over the top. They all dress in the absolute latest expensive fashions.
Yes.
They spend money like water at bars and nightclubs. Don't forget, there's no
like champagne
prohibition
fountains
over there.
And
totally.
Okay.
The gang members are loving it. What a life. You know who else loved it?
Me. I love it.
Newspapers.
Oh, of course. Oh, that too.
Like, and the public couldn't wait to read about all their exploits.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted to read about their nights on the town, see the pictures.
People forget that about the gangster era of the 20s is they were like the celebrities
too. Yes, exactly. So we have that on both sides of the Atlantic
completely.
Right now. Police were begging newspaper editors to stop writing about them. You're like, you are fanning the flames. This, you're making this look way too good.
Also, police supported cancel culture is what you're telling me.
Exactly.
Like, we need to deplatform them.
The papers are like, what the police want or money in our pockets?
Yeah.
They're like, sorry, we got to sell these rags.
Yeah,
like,
sorry, we're in the paper selling business.
Yeah. So then Alice, like, she changed more about the gang than just partying habits.
Uh-huh.
She organized the girls into cells. Like terrorist cells.
Exactly.
And they're spread throughout the city. They like they would hit multiple high-end department stores at once. Each cell would be assigned to a different
at the same time? Like a coordinated
all at once.
So that way they're
like,
stressing police response.
Yes. Synchronized watches.
I gotcha.
Police attention is divided and spread thin. Oh yeah. A lot
they're doing
of
flash mob crimes.
Totally. A lot of the items that were stolen by the gang would be sold in this network of fences across North and South London.
And I imagine some of this stuff is being ferried, like the stolen goods are not being then resold in London. They're being taken to the continent, sold in.
Yes. There's a lot of international back and forth. They had these like storehouses and stuff where they would ship stuff.
Makes sense.
Items of lesser value were sold at like street markets and pawn shops.
Yeah, yeah. Or outside of, like, the underground tubes.
Right. Clothing was sold to shops that were like, willing to swap labels or alter designs a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All tracks were always covered, though, no matter what they did. Alice started using decoys. So
lookalikes?
No. Oh. Less experienced gang members would go into a store and act like they were going to steal something, like, look super suspicious.
Yeah. Nice.
They would, like, stand, like, way too close to the front door while holding something really expensive.
Uh-huh.
So store guards
would be looking
like,
around a lot, acting all dodgy.
And then, meanwhile, the more experienced thieves are, like, doing all their work unobserved.
Yeah, they're walking the jewelry out the back door.
Yes, exactly. Then they did this in reverse, so that if there was, like, a well-known, seasoned, and, like, therefore suspicious gang member, they would be followed around a store. And so then they would send an unknown new girl in who would have the opportunity to do all her work while everyone's focused on the well-known thief.
This is like lionesses teaching the lion cubs to hunt.
Yes, this is amazing.
I'm going to go distract the buffalo, the Cape buffalo. You come in from behind.
In one of these instances where a well-known thief was like cruising a store, a young rookie gets caught and it was discovered she had like over 40 different items in her clothes that she had just been like zwink, zwink, zwinking. Yeah. So because Alice, she taught the girls how to modify their outfits. Like I said, they had like hidden pockets. And in like
we're talking
skirts.
Pockets, we mean like things where you're sliding it into a piece of fabric that's just, it looks like it's natural.
Like
there's
exactly.
no line, there's no
And
pouch.
They were in the skirts, the coats, their hats, in their bloomers.
In their bloomers.
Yeah. Some outfits were like especially tailored for robbing like specific shops.
Okay.
And then a lot of them would wear like muffs and cummerbunds because you can like,
oh, you can
know.
Pluck and tuck.
Totally. That's like a hip, the hip
I just
bag
came
right
up with
there.
That, pluck and tuck.
There was a gang member who had an artificial arm that she would use.
Yes. Where I'm it was sorry. Like, I love that stuff.
It's like she has that all out, like exposed, and then her other arm underneath is just like shoveling stuff into her pockets.
That's amazing.
They did this thing. They had a crush technique. The gang would all descend onto a shop at once and overwhelm the employees.
Mm-hmm.
So they would all be asking to see different items, and then they would pass them along to each other to look
Moving
at.
Around, yeah.
And then suddenly it gets passed right out the door. There was a detective who was quoted as saying, "They will descend like a gang of locusts in taxis and chauffeur-driven limousines, cleaning out a store inside 1 hour without giving any breathing space whatsoever."
So they were like the Bling Ring, but instead of going to the houses, they would just go right to the stores.
They're just showing up at the
stores. Run game on them.
And they're looking legit when they walk in.
Oh, yeah, they're wearing all the latest.
And then here's the thing. You're working in a shop. I don't know if they're working on commission, but like...
I assume so.
You're getting... You have all these women walking in who look like they've got money to spend, and you don't want to be the one who's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
this looks like... This looks shady.
You don't want to turn down a customer.
And they can
say... You
don't
know what a customer looks like always.
I don't know any of these women. We all just happened to come in here at the same time, and now you're going to blame me while I'm taking my money somewhere
Exactly.
else.
Yeah. You can't run that risk.
So they're kind of hoping that everyone's hunger for cash is going to play. In one of the tricks, a gang member stuck a piece of gum under the counter and then asked to see some jewelry.
Uh-huh.
And then with like the person looks away, the counter person looks away, they stick the jewelry into the gum and then another gang member comes by and takes it.
Uh-huh.
And so then the initial girl, she gets like confronted, like, "Oh, where's the ring I
Does
was showing
have an
you?
Honor.
Search me. I don't have it. I don't know where you must have
you
misplaced
dropped
it.
Maybe you stole it."
Exactly. Oh, you try and blame me. We see, like, from old Maggie and her V8 with the periscope,
yes.
the gang started getting into cars.
Oh,
big time.
Oh, yeah, my girl.
They made high-speed police chases, like, a regular occurrence.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine going back in time and be able to watch one of these things?
Of just,
I'd
like,
lose it.
Hauling down the road, there's a
periscope. Yeah.
Like, some, like, really beautifully dressed, like...
Beautifully dressed, and it's all chitty-chitty bang-bang. I mean,
totally. And, like, the thing is that those chases always ended in confusion because they would make their escape, but they already had, like, figured out where they would meet up with other gang members and just, like, hand stuff off.
Imagine
and keep
you have
driving.
Distraction, like, a car breaks down to
and
close off the road.
And then loot would get passed, like, a couple times to different cars and then drive on. And so the police catch up and it's like, what?
Doing, I have like, nothing. Three handoffs.
Yeah, there's nothing in this car. Search it. And then they have to let him go. So they would, like... You know, they wouldn't get, like, evading police charges,
totally,
I guess.
But they know dead to rights, like we, but yet they cannot prove anything.
Would
you catch them on speeding?
Exactly. Probably.
Yeah.
So the cars also let them operate outside of London. And they really needed that because they're becoming more and more recognizable. So they're going off to, like, Bath, Bristol.
Okay, I was just about to ask. Where do you go?
And so, well, the thing is, they would go to those other cities, go to shops there, then come back to London all before midnight, lock up everything in their storehouses so that they could resell them, so that the cars gave them that really fast mobility. Outsiders that were caught working in their territory were confronted.
So, yeah, are they violent?
Yeah.
And there ain't no way to...
And they'd have to...
Ain't two ways to say that. Yeah.
They'd have to, like, give them a cut. Like, if you get caught working the territory, now you got to give us a cut.
Huh.
And if they refuse...
Well, that's just the Cosa Nostra standard,
yeah.
which is like, look,
but if they
now
refuse,
you're working for us.
Then the 40 elephants used the Elephant and Castle Mob as their heavies to, like, beat and kidnap until they get paid.
So they basically would take these criminal drone bees and send them out the river.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Well, they're like the male lions.
Yeah,
like they go out and fight and
most
defend
of the time,
the territory.
They're just sleeping.
Exactly.
Occasionally they're asked to go.
And so, like, even though they loved their cars, they supported public transportation and infrastructure.
Oh, boom, boom. I
trains,
like that too.
Trains.
Trains.
So they
trains,
used,
Elizabeth.
They used the British railway system in their work. They would travel to other towns with empty suitcases and leave those at the station. And then they would come back from the stores they hit, pack everything into the empty suitcases and
hand that off.
Ride away. Yeah.
Oh, and they would even travel with
they
it.
They would travel with it and then hand it off.
I thought they were just loaded onto like a car. Well, yeah,
I'm sure
like,
they did. Yeah. You know, a million iterations of this. They were really respected for their work ethic, ironically
I respect
enough.
Them for their work ethic.
And Alice implemented something called the Hoister's Code.
Okay, this is like a pirate code?
Yeah. So here's some of the elements of it. Money made from heists is always divided equally.
That's very pirate.
Everyone was expected to provide alibis, whether real or fictional, for their fellow gang members.
Smarter than pirates.
No drinking was allowed the night before or the day of a job.
Also smarter
Maggie,
than pirates.
Maggie, we're looking at you.
Maggie, this was called the Maggie
this
rule.
Is the Maggie law.
We all know why, Maggie.
Maggie's law.
Yeah, Maggie's law.
No police interaction whatsoever. Like, don't even look at them. Don't even give them the time of day.
I thought it was like, don't date them, don't talk
well,
to them.
Most certainly, yeah. If a gang member is caught and arrested, their family would be protected while they're incarcerated, but you got to do the time. No cutting a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's good for morale because
no
if
deals,
you can take care of, that's the big fear you have.
Totally. And so no deals on prison time, no deals on like informing on it, nothing.
Yeah.
So
that's really smart.
They created a fund and they put it aside specifically for family members of incarcerated gang members. However, as useful.
It's like a strike fund. But
oh, yeah, totally. As useful as the Hoister's Code was, it ultimately ended up being Alice's downfall.
How could it be her downfall? Did she, like, write it down and sign it or something?
When we come back from this break, I'll tell you how things went south for Alice, a.k.a. Diamond Annie, Diamond Alice.
A spirit of adventure lives inside of us. Nissan's SUVs have the capabilities to transform your spirit of adventure into actual rubber meets the road into the wild, true blue, real life adventure. You just need a Nissan and a plan. Or better yet, just a Nissan. You can hop into a Nissan Rogue and discover what comes next. Don't worry, the Nissan Rogue has your back. Class-exclusive Google built-in is your always-updating assistant to call on for almost anything. Just climb in and go. No need to connect your phone. Google Assistant, Google Maps, and Google Play Store are built right into the 12.3-inch HD touchscreen infotainment system of the new 2024 Nissan Rogue. No matter where you roam, you'll stay connected to home. Life is one huge adventure, and every day is a little one. No matter if the ride you're on is big or small, a Nissan Rogue, Nissan Pathfinder, or Nissan Armada can elevate your adventure and push your limits to something new. Your next adventure is waiting for you. Get in a Nissan SUV and go. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride. We're gonna have some fun.
We'll explore and listen to the sounds of awesome places like farms, racetracks, and even construction sites.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
They'll teach us awesome new things about the places and things we see and hear.
What did we learn today?
Learning is so cool.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip Podcasts on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't
feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Zarin.
Elizabeth.
When we left off, I was telling you about 40 elephants and their queen, Alice Diamond.
Diamond
AKA
Alice.
Diamond Alice.
And her
Diamond
right-hand
Annie.
Lady, Maggie.
Maggie. Alice instituted the Hoister's Code.
Yes.
It's a set of rules that gang members had to live by. Mm-hmm. Part of the Hoister's Code was total obedience to Alice.
You can't put that in. That's not democratic. Well, that's the one thing about a code is usually supposed to be kind of democratic.
Yeah.
We all live by this rule.
This included,
she does not live by that rule.
No, this included needing her approval for dating or marrying anyone.
Oh, that's real bad.
Alice knew
affairs
the pitfalls.
Affairs of the heart. Come on
now. But Alice knew the pitfalls of love. She didn't want gang members telling new suitors about plans.
Sure.
And she wanted to be able to vet dudes to make sure there are no undercover cops.
I mean, all smart, but you got to figure out a way other than just you have that power.
Right.
It's got to be some other code. I don't know what, but I mean,
you
can't just be Alice. Because what happens if Alice is sick for 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. So there's this gang member named Marie Britton.
Okay.
And she didn't like that part of the code.
I'm with Marie.
Word got around. She'd met a guy, got pregnant.
Uh-oh.
Got married.
Uh-oh.
Didn't run it by Alice.
Ooh.
Alice is livid. You have to follow all of the code or none of the code.
Alice, take the baby away?
Well, no, Marie's out. She's like, you're out of the gang, right?
That's bad, though, because you're not really out.
Well, leaving a gang's not so simple.
Yeah, you can't.
Zarin, close your eyes.
Oh, wondering. You got me dangling out here. All right, my eyes are closed.
It's December 1925, London. It's the holiday season. You're sitting in a pub, the Canterbury Arms Club in Waterloo, South London. The air is filled with tobacco smoke and the sound of clinking glasses and people making merry. While the economy isn't so hot for you and yours, the pub is full of revelers spending like there's no tomorrow. You know what that means. They're in a business that's always flush. Criming. They're members of the criming community. It's getting towards the end of the evening. You're ready to head home, but you hear the beginnings of an altercation that looks a little interesting. Two women, fully in their cups, are snapping at each other, trading insults and calling names. You know exactly who they are. Everyone does. That's Marie Jackson, née Britton, and Bertha Tappenden.
Uh-oh.
Bertha is a member of the 40 Elephants.
Damn right she is.
So was Marie up until recently, when she got the boot. Bertha's yelling something about an outsider husband, and Marie is yelling right back about love and minding one's own business. Finally, Marie has had enough. She lunges at Bertha with a broken wine glass. Marie's father, Bill Britton, stops her. Then he punches Bertha himself. A hush falls over the pub. Then the whole place erupts into a fight, men and women alike coming to blows. Marie and her dad eventually run from the pub and everything dies down. You look around and realize you've got your cousin by the collar and you're ready to pound his face in.
For unrelated reasons.
You look at each other, you laugh, dust yourselves off. Let's call it a night.
Sorry,
let's head on home. So the 40 elephants, though, they're not ready to call it a night. Not by a long shot. Mad Dog Maggie. Maggie, she is fired up.
My girl.
She tells Alice what happened. And that, according to her, Marie and the dad started the whole brawl and then went home. All Alice right. has to act. So later that night, Alice, Maggie, and like a dozen gang members make their way to Marie's door.
And are these the male or female gang members?
A little bit of both.
Okay. Just curious.
Yeah. Mostly the women.
Okay.
Alice knocks on the door. Door opens quickly. They're expecting to see Marie, but all Alice sees is a jug full of water headed right at her face. Marie just dumps a huge bucket of water in her face. Quick question, was that smart? of Marie.
I'm going to go with it did not help things.
No. Maggie tells the group, break down the door. So armed with a pistol, iron bars, knives, and bricks, they busted into the house and just wrecked shop. They held Marie at gunpoint while they beat her father, her new husband, and her 15-year-old brother senseless.
Damn.
Violent.
It's like all of a sudden a Scorsese movie.
Right? Not everyone could fit in the house to get in on said violence. So the crooks out on the street started settling for just like throwing rocks and bottles.
Into the window.
Yeah, they're just pummeling the house.
There's like a line waiting for like my turn. Now serving number seven. Number seven.
Marie's dad is severely injured in this. I should note, okay, there are a couple different accounts of this melee. It's referred to as the Lambeth Riot of 1925.
Wait, three people getting beaten up so badly it was called a riot?
There were dozens of people.
I know how many people are beating them up, but usually like a riot is like a, okay.
Well, in some accounts.
That's amazing.
Some say it's Marie and her husband.
If your family got beaten up so bad, everyone called it a riot? That's amazing.
So there are some accounts that they say it's Marie and her husband who are the ones mixing it up with gangs. Other ones, it's Marie and her father. Some say it's her father and her brother. I just say it's all three.
I like going with all three. Yeah. I'm believing that one.
So Marie's dad, he's beaten within an inch of his life. The only thing that saves him, the cops. So this is also, don't forget, all these families, like no woman in the 40 Elephants comes from like a straight arrow family.
Yeah.
So these are like a bunch of criminals. The cops come.
They can throw a blow.
For the first time in his life, he's like, oh, thank God, it's the cops.
Oh, thank God, the police.
The police arrive. They arrest pretty much everybody there. Everyone gets charged and sentenced. Alice is sentenced to 18 months in prison.
Oh, Alice was
the queen.
She wasn't just like sitting in like a broham watching.
Like,
she's actually involved,
she's like
dusting with the diamonds.
Yes. So
damn.
That was the downfall. Her own code. Marie broke it, brings it all down. So
yeah, see?
She gets 18 months in prison. Maggie gets 5 years because of all her past violent acts and the fact that she sort of incited the whole riot by busting down the door.
Yeah, they're probably going to give her like, you know, exercise of control.
Exactly.
And plus, she's a tattooed spark plug. The judge is going to throw the book at her.
You know what? Lock her up. By the time Alice got out of prison 18 months later, there was a new queen of the 40 Elephants, Lillian Rose Kendall, a.k.a. the Bob-haired bandit.
Bob-haired bandit. Oh, so she's like a, what do you call it, flapper?
Full-on flapper at this point. Lillian, total crack getaway driver. She brought a new technique to the 40 Elephants, something called ram raiding.
Ram raiding?
We would call it a smash and grab
today.
Oh, okay. So they would drive a car through a department store window, grab everything within sight and reach, then like throw it into reverse and drive away.
That is more than a smash and grab.
And like Lillian's beau was this guy who did that for the Elephant and Castle Mob.
Yeah.
And he would travel with like little sterilized clips to seal up slices from glass that they would get.
Oh, wow.
And so they could like, until they could go get stitches.
He needed clips. They were so big.
Yeah.
Cuts.
Well, I mean, huge panes
of
glass.
Oh, I know. But that's an impressive.
Yeah.
Like,
so times were changing, though. So by 1938, Crazy Maggie had been kicked out of the gang for being too much of a liability.
Oh.
Yeah. That's like if you get kicked out of a criminal operation, you're just too much of a wild card.
Mags was a little bit unhinged.
Her last arrest was in 1939. She served 3 years for attacking two women with broken bottles, resulting in one of them losing an eye.
Oof.
Yeah. Alice got out of prison.
It's hard to defend her violence.
Well, in other reports, there are some that say that she was busted for stabbing a cop in the eye with a hat pin.
Oh, God.
But either way, someone lost an eye and she went to jail.
It was definitely an eye and a pokey thing. Okay.
Right. Alice got out of prison, but not out of the life. She became a brothel madam when she got out.
That's an aging smart move.
She coached a whole new generation of women on the art of surviving by any means necessary.
Yeah.
When World War II came around, she refused to evacuate London.
Good on her.
Right? She's just like, look, I'm built to last. So for the remaining...
Not built for speed, I'm built to last.
Exactly. For the remaining gang members, making a living doing this kind of crime got harder and harder.
Okay.
Fashions changed and got like sleeker and more refined.
Materials, so it was not all the...
Yeah, it was really hard to find like spots to hide all your merch.
You're down to like maybe a coat.
Yeah, exactly. Police and detective and like security techniques evolved faster than the gang techniques did.
Yeah, the car radio busted a lot of people.
Right.
They could respond quicker, and all of a sudden you're trying to drive and they've closed down the circle.
Yeah,
on you. I mean,
exactly.
Like,
by the 50s, the gang had pretty much fizzled. Their last queen was a woman named Shirley Pitts, and she took pride in not having ever informed on anyone, but also never got mixed up in violence.
Well,
she
I respect like, that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know me. I don't mind a criminal as long as they don't get violent.
That's how I feel. Keeping up with the times, she would work stores with what she called her, quote, magic bag, which was a tinfoil-lined purse that would interfere with store security tags.
Oh, I was just about to ask. I'm like, okay, she made a Faraday cage.
She became a legend in her own right. She took her teams of thieves, and then they went to, like, Geneva and Paris.
Yes.
So they were just, like,
you know. They're working the circuit.
Like, you know how those travel nurses go around to hotspots?
Thieves sans borders or sans frontiers.
So she did 3 years in prison, and she's one of the few women to successfully escape from a British prison.
Ooh, respect.
She jumped out of, she like got out of a prison van that was driving her to court because she didn't want to give birth to her daughter in prison.
So she jumped out of the thing pregnant.
Yeah. That was her escape.
Badass.
When she passed away, it was an absolute British tabloid sensation. Her funeral was attended like by her family and then all her criminal acquaintances.
And, like by the Krays and the other.
Including the great train robber, Buster Edwards.
Ah, respect.
There he is. There was, at her funeral, there was a 6-foot long flower arrangement that was crafted that said, "Gone Shopping" on it.
Get in.
And she was buried in a Zandra Rhodes dress that the press said was a dress that she stole.
Mm-hmm.
But her friends were like, no, she paid for that.
They're like, that she stole her last dress.
Exactly.
Though.
So, Zarin.
Yes.
Do I get to keep my job?
Okay. As much as I would like to be able to answer that question, I'm going to need you to come back and do this one more time, and then we can talk about it. Because that was really
Perfect.
Good. That was really good. But
thank you.
I cannot decide, and I hate to like leave you dangling like this, but yeah.
Okay.
Come
cool.
back again.
I'll
Let's
be
do
back.
This all over
I'll
one more
back.
Time.
What's your ridiculous takeaway?
My ridiculous takeaway? Oh, man.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, well, you know, women, like a group of women responding to the conditions of their time were far smarter criminals than any group of men I've heard about. All the stuff they did, only the ones that rival are like the pirates, some couple of the assassin groups. Like, very few criminals come up with a group ethos that allows them to last for decades.
Right.
I mean, there are numerous things you can point to that people think of as institutions that have not lasted as long as the 40 elephants.
Exactly.
I'm impressed by the group ethos of those lionesses.
Yes, I agree.
What's your ridiculous takeaway? Hear me over here asking? Look at that, Elizabeth.
Thank
That's
you
how
for
it's
asking.
Done.
Thank you for asking. Thank you so much for asking.
In case you get to come back
my
next time, is what I'm saying.
My takeaway is I'm with you. I think that this is like, they're so clever with it. For the most part, I mean, they were pretty violent, and I didn't
but I'm kind of walking around that one.
Yeah, but I think like at the core of it, it's really interesting how they take desperate times and their desperate measures were pretty fascinating. And seeing way into the future of what's possible for women in society,
yes.
that, you know, you can go out and just create your own thing and
totally.
Be your own boss. Now, granted, they couldn't do that legally, so they had to do that outside of the law.
But they did it with self-regard. They said, these may be the conditions you think I live in. I will show you the conditions
and
I live in.
And I think that like, a lot of their recklessness is a product of those conditions where it's
and
like, what have I got to lose? Yeah.
Those childhoods, I mean, you know what we now know about your formative years and how important it is, the 0 to 5 or 0 to 3, whichever, or 0 to 8, there's numerous metrics, but can you imagine what they lived through and just the regular beatings and who they saw like as lessons of don't do this because it turns out like that, don't do this, always do this or otherwise. They would have had so many always and nevers
and
in their life.
And I would imagine just the everyday violence.
Yeah, so exactly.
Like, so they would have been very, to it.
Exactly. Yeah. Numb to it and you see it as a language and not as a forbidden thing.
Right. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating. I'd like to, apparently they're making a movie about them. I don't
I
know much about
good.
It. I
they,
do
they mess up so many of these things because they decide to make it fluff and they get actresses you cannot believe would have ever done this thing. I'm like, her teeth are all clean.
Oh,
like,
I kind of want to see a Guy Ritchie version of this.
Yeah, of course. I would love to see a Guy Ritchie version.
That'd be amazing.
Who did the train movie with Brad Pitt where he's getting beaten up for
Bullet
an
train.
Hour and a half? Whoever made that, I'd like to see them make
that
it.
Was good. I could deal with it. Normally, I can't take someone getting beaten up for an hour and a half, but I liked that.
But that
movie.
Was a good one. And just
clever.
An enduring beatdown.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. Enduring beatdowns. That's it for today. You can find us online at Ridiculous Crime on both Twitter for the talking and Instagram for the gawking. Email us at ridiculouscrime@gmail.com. Other than that, tune in next time. Ridiculous Crime is hosted by Elizabeth Dutton and Zarin Burnett. Produced and edited by Diamond Dave Kustin. Research is by the 39th Elephant, Andrea Song Charpentier. The theme song is by Thomas Hippo and Townhouse Lee and Travis Giraffe and Cottage Dutton. Executive producers are Notorious Flying Squad detectives Ben Bolin and Noel Brown.
Ridiculous Crime.
Say it one more time.
Ridiculous Crime.
Ridiculous Crime is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, it's me, Blippi, and this is my best friend, Mika.
Hi, I'm Mika, and this is our brand new podcast,
Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. The Blippi-mobile will take us to amazing places.
And we'll meet new friends along the way.
Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.